Welcome back to the nursing desk. Pull up a chair, get comfortable. You know, usually when we sit down to review market movements, there's this underlying assumption of rationality, right?
Right. Like the people moving billions of institutional capital actually live in the same mathematical universe as we do.
Exactly. But if you spend enough time at this particular observation post, you know, looking out over what feels like a high security psychiatric ward for commercial real estate titans, you start to realize just how disconnected from reality the industry can become.
Yeah. And right on cue, we have a new agitated patient wheeling in today.
We sure do. It's a familiar spectacle, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You watch these developers, these private equity optimists pacing the halls, clutching their spreadsheets like security blankets.
Right.
The delusion they're suffering from is just systemic. And frankly, it is exhausting to witness from the sidelines.
Exhausting is the perfect word for it. The patient currently screaming in the triage bay is this industry-wide hallucination that vacant, aging office buildings are the ready-made cure for the global housing crisis.
Right, the whole golden age narrative.
Yeah, just gut the cubicles, slap up some drywall, run a few pipes, and boom, we are in a golden age of urban housing. So let's step back and look at the chart. What is the clinical diagnosis here?
Well, the formal diagnosis is acute macroeconomic fantasy.
Wow. Acute macroeconomic fantasy.
Yeah. It's characterized by a complete willful ignorance of structural and financial physics. You have market experts running around polishing pro formas,
which are basically just financial projections.
Exactly, just projections. And they're selling this mass conversion narrative that makes absolutely zero mathematical sense.
They're basically in a state of deep cognitive decline, right?
Precisely. Projecting optimism onto concrete shells that simply cannot support it.
Which brings us to the actual field intelligence we are reviewing today. We're looking at the latest diagnostic notes from Priyanshu, or Priya Adafakar,
the chief of surgery at the commercial real estate clinic, if we're keeping the metaphor.
Exactly. Pri is a premier hotel and commercial real estate investment advisor, a fellow realtor, and looking at his recent dispatches, he's essentially the lead investigator calling out this industry-wide cognitive decline.
It's a completely necessary perspective, because while the rest of the market is throwing a parade for this conversion fantasy, Pri's boots-on-the-ground diagnosis cuts right through the noise.
And you're analyzing current 2026 data, right?
Yeah, particularly in volatile markets like Central Ohio and major central business districts. And his findings are brutally stark.
Stark is putting it mildly. I mean, 90%.
Yeah, 90%.
According to Pri's field reports, about 90% of the vacant office inventory sitting out there is fundamentally unsuitable for residential conversion. 90%.
It's staggering.
It really is. So our mission for this deep dive is to perform an autopsy on this hallucination. We're going to deconstruct the symptoms those polite little spreadsheets failed to mention and see how Pri actually navigates these complex realities to protect his client's capital.
Well, to do that, we have to drop the medical metaphors for a second and start with the literal physical examination of the buildings.
Right, because this fantasy fails before the ink on the permits is even dry.
Exactly. It fails because of the fundamental physics of real estate. You just cannot wish away the structural anatomy of a 1980s glass monolith.
Let's unpack that, because the engineering is where it gets really interesting. As Pri notes in the patient's chart, modern office buildings were engineered for utility, not domestic life.
Right. They were built for hundreds of people to stare at screens under fluorescent lights.
Exactly. So the first major symptom Pri identifies is something called the deep floor plate.
Yeah. And the deep floor plate is a terminal condition for most of these assets. Think about the geometry of a modern office tower.
Just massive squares.
Right. Massive sprawling squares or rectangles, sometimes 30 or 40,000 square feet per floor. But residential building codes strictly mandate that bedrooms must have access to natural light and operable windows.
Which, you know, makes sense. Nobody wants to sleep in a sensory deprivation tank.
Exactly. But because of that massive square footage, you only have windows on the perimeter. As you move 40, 50 feet inward toward the elevators, you hit what pre-diagnoses as the dark center.
A dark center. That sounds incredibly ominous.
Oh, it is ominous for a developer's budget. It is thousands of square feet of completely dead, windowless, legally unleasable concrete in the middle of the building.
So how do they even try to fix that?
Well, to get light into those interior units, developers have to carve massive, unimaginably expensive atriums right down through the core of the skyscraper.
Wow.
You are literally cutting the heart out of the building.
And while they're dreaming of carving atriums out of solid concrete, they seem to completely ignore the plumbing.
Oh, the plumbing is a nightmare.
Right. Let's talk about the bathrooms. Imagine a typical high-rise office floor. You get off the elevator, and the men's and women's rooms are clustered right there in the center core.
Just one central plumbing hub.
Exactly, which works perfectly for a commercial space.
Yeah.
But pivot to residential, and suddenly the anatomy is entirely wrong.
Right, you need unit-specific plumbing. A kitchen sink, a dishwasher, a shower, a toilet, a washer-dryer hookup in every single apartment spanning out across the entire floor.
And this isn't just a matter of, like, running some PVC pipes behind drywall, right?
Mm.
I really want to get into the why here. Why is it so hard to just add plumbing?
Because of how these buildings are constructed. Most modern office floors are made of post-tension concrete slabs.
Okay, wait, pause there for a second. For anyone who isn't a structural engineer, what does post-tensioned actually mean?
It means there are high-tension steel cables running inside the concrete to give it its immense strength. They are stretched incredibly tight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if a plumber blindly cores a hole through the floor for a new toilet drain and accidentally snaps one of those cables, the structural integrity of that entire floor is instantly compromised.
It can cause catastrophic failure, right?
Absolutely. You literally cannot just drill wherever you want. Mapping and safely coring through post-tensioned concrete to run 50 new sewer lines per floor is a logistical nightmare, and it's incredibly cost prohibitive.
I have to bring up an analogy here, because the market's optimism is just staggering when you lay out these facts.
Please do.
It's like trying to surgically turn a commercial cargo plane into a luxury passenger train just because they both happen to transport things. The anatomy is completely wrong.
That is perfectly stated.
But wait, I have to play devil's advocate for a second. I read headlines all the time about successful conversions in Manhattan, Chicago, Cleveland. Are you and Pri saying everyone is just lying?
No, they aren't lying about the successful ones, but they are suffering from institutional amnesia.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning they highlight the 10% that actually works, which we will get to, and they project that success onto the other 90% that structurally cannot handle it.
They want a quick fix to the vacancy crisis.
Exactly. But structural soundness does not equal residential viability. And even if you solve the plumbing and the dark centers, you hit the next symptom Pri warns about, which is vertical shrinkage.
Right, the ceilings.
Yes. When you convert commercial to residential, you have to integrate entirely new, highly stringent residential fire suppression systems.
And acoustic insulation, too.
Tons of it. In an office, you don't care if the guy above you drops a stapler. In a luxury apartment, you do not want to hear the person above you walking across their living room at 2 a.m.
Right, so to hide all that new insulation and those fire sprinklers, you have to drop the ceilings.
You drop them significantly. And suddenly, your pitch for a luxury, light-filled urban loft features claustrophobic, compressed, 8-foot ceilings.
Wow.
Yeah, you have just spent millions of dollars to create a dark, low-ceilinged box that completely ruins the asset's market appeal.
Okay, so the physical building fights you every step of the way. The structural surgery is an absolute bloodbath.
It is.
But let's say I'm a billionaire developer.
Uh-huh.
I don't care about the construction costs. I have the capital. I want it done. And I'm going to force my way through the physics. What happens next?
Well, according to Pri's notes, the city and the financial markets will immediately step in and reject the project anyway.
So you move from physical hurdles to legal and financial friction.
Exactly. Structural soundness, as we established, does not guarantee legality. First, you run headfirst into massive zoning restrictions. Central business districts, or CBDs, are rigidly zoned for commercial use.
Right. They're designed for a 9-to-5 population, not 247 domestic life.
And the moment you try to rezone a massive commercial block, you run into years of political friction.
Like in NMBY opposition, right.
Oh.
Not in my backyard.
Yes.
And, you know, people usually associate NMBYs with the suburbs, but it happens in commercial districts, too. Existing stakeholders worry about traffic patterns, noise during years of construction, and the fact that there is zero grocery or school infrastructure in a corporate plaza.
Exactly. And beyond the zoning politics, you face severe life safety code gaps.
Egress issues.
Yes. Residential egress, meaning the designated pathways people use to escape in a fire, is entirely different from commercial standards. Offices have open floor plans, so you can usually see an exit sign from your desk.
Whereas apartments have winding hallways, dead ends, and individual walls.
Precisely. Upgrading an older, vacant office tower to meet these stringent residential life safety codes often requires a near total teardown of the existing infrastructure. You are basically building a new building inside an old skeleton.
Which naturally brings us to the financial autopsy. the basis problem.
Yes. This is where the patient truly flatlines.
Paré points out with brutal clarity that the math simply doesn't pencil out for private equity. But let's pause on the basis problem for a second.
Sure.
For anyone listening who isn't staring at commercial real estate spreadsheets all day, what does that actually mean in plain English?
Think of it like buying a used car. If you buy a beat-up car for $50,000, but it needs $40,000 in repairs, and its final pristine market value is only $60,000.
You are losing $30,000.
Exactly. Your basis, your starting cost, was fundamentally too high to justify the investment.
So apply that to these skyscrapers.
For a conversion deal to even begin to survive mathematically, the current owners have to sell the building essentially at land value.
Just for the dirt it sits on.
Right. They have to completely wipe out the value of the structure itself, because as we just discussed, the structure is a liability. It's an obstacle you have to pay to fix.
But the lenders holding the notes on those buildings are stubbornly refusing to accept that reality, right? Mm-hmm. The banks and private equity firms are still carrying these buildings on their books at 2019 valuations.
Yeah, they're playing a game of extend and pretend.
Extend and pretend. That is the perfect term for it.
It really is. Lenders keep extending the terms of the bad loans and pretending the building is still worth what it was before the pandemic.
Because if they actually mark these buildings down to their true 2026 market reality, they take massive multi-million dollar write-downs.
Exactly. Some of these regional banks would become insolvent overnight.
Wow. And even if you somehow convince a lender to sell you the building for dirt value, the construction complexity is staggering.
Right. As prize notes indicate, working inside an existing compromised shell means conversion costs frequently exceed the price of brand new, ground-up construction.
It is literally more expensive to fix the broken anatomy than to just demolish it and build a new body.
That is the core of the macroeconomic fantasy right there.
So you have structural surgery that costs more than building from scratch. You have current owners and lenders refusing to take the necessary write-downs, which leads to the obvious question, who exactly is signing off on these hallucinatory IRRs?
Right, the internal rate of return.
Yeah, the percentage of profit a developer promises their investors.
Mm.
Who looks at a project with all these physical, legal, and financial landmines mm-hmm. and says, yes, we'll definitely make a 15% return on this?
Honestly, no one grounded in reality. The cap rates being used to justify these projects are purely imaginary.
Hallucinatory cap rates.
Completely. Lenders view these as incredibly high-risk projects because they are. Without massive government subsidies, the IRR is severely depleted. It just does not work.
And if you're listening to this and wondering why you should care about a billionaire developer's hallucinatory spreadsheet, remember where this capital comes from.
It's institutional money.
Exactly. It's pension funds. It's 401ks. And it's municipal tax breaks.
Yeah.
When these massive, poorly conceived conversion projects fail, it's the city's taxpayers and everyday retirement investors who end up footing the bill.
Which is precisely why Paré's perspective is so vital. He identified this cognitive decline in leadership, this institutional amnesia regarding looming debt service cliffs, while everyone else was blindly trusting polite spreadsheets.
Yeah, as Paré points out, expecting vacant inventory to magically solve the housing crisis without addressing the physical, legal, and financial realities is a fundamental misunderstanding of industry mechanics.
Exactly.
So what does this mean for the patient? Is the entire concept of adaptive reuse dead on arrival? Do we just board up every office building in the country?
Well, not entirely. And this is where the treatment plan comes in. Yeah. Having established that 90% of the market is chasing a ghost, we pivot to Paré's reverse psychology solution. How does a reality-grounded professional actually unlock hidden value in this mess?
By looking at the brain of the deal rather than chasing an inflated imaginary IRR.
Exactly. Paré isn't writing off the entire concept of conversion. He is just refusing to use a sledgehammer where a highly specialized scalpel is required.
He acknowledges the 10% reality.
Right. Only a tiny, specific sliver of inventory is actually physically and financially viable for this kind of surgery.
He's hunting for the unicorn asset. I really love this part of his field reports.
Mm-hmm.
What are the clinical traits of a unicorn building? Mm-hmm. How does a building actually survive this operation?
Paré looks for three very specific markers. First, pre-war architecture.
Pre-war, which is fascinating because you'd think newer is better.
You would think that, yeah. But buildings constructed before the advent of modern central air conditioning actually had to be designed for natural light and cross ventilation.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Right. That's the key. Because they relied on windows for air and light, they naturally feature smaller, shallower floor plates. Often they are shaped like an H or a U.
So they don't have that terminal dark center trap we diagnosed earlier.
Exactly. The physical anatomy is already much closer to residential needs.
Brilliant. Okay, what's the second marker?
Location. The asset must be in an established live work play district. Trying to convert a vacant, isolated office park surrounded by a sea of parking lots and a six-lane highway is a fool's errand.
Yeah, the surrounding infrastructure has to support domestic life,
yeah,
like walkability, grocery stores, transit.
Precisely. And the third trait, favorable tax environments.
You need a municipality that understands the basis problem, right?
Absolutely. You need a city that is actively providing heavy incentives, historical tax credits, and subsidies for urban renewal to help bridge that massive financial gap.
So how does Pry actually execute this strategy for his clients? What does his process look like when he's out there in the field in central Ohio or any major CBD?
Pry relies on what he calls feasibility sprints. It's a very boots-on-the-ground approach.
Oh.
He conducts rigorous, unforgiving structural and financial audits well before anyone is allowed to assume an office asset can be pivoted. He basically demands a total asset reset.
An asset reset, meaning you have to completely overhaul the pricing expectations and accept the brutal reality of the building codes before you even start drawing up architectural plans.
Yes, it requires clinical honesty. And this really proves his unique authority.
Right. By identifying the reality early, he shields his clients from chronic litigation, severe IRR depletion, and the disastrous loss of capital tied up in projects that are fundamentally doomed from day one.
Exactly.
There is a really dark irony in all of this. You have the entire rest of the industry blindly swinging sledgehammers at post-tensioned concrete walls, screaming about a golden age of housing.
Right.
And then you have Pry, quietly standing in the corner, reading the structural blueprints, analyzing the tax codes, and methodically identifying the 10% that actually works. He sees what the spreadsheets miss.
It is the difference between practicing medicine and practicing witchcraft. Pry is applying a targeted tool for urban renewal.
Treating conversions is a highly specific surgical application, not a universal magical fix for the housing crisis.
Exactly. Navigating a volatile market today absolutely requires a specialist. If you are an institutional owner, a private developer, or frankly, a city planner, you cannot afford to be caught up in this mass delusion.
You truly cannot. Priyanshu Adathakar's dual authority as a commercial real estate investment advisor and a fellow realtor gives him the exact diagnostic tools required for this moment.
He is the definitive expert, the solo authority willing to deliver the brutal clinical honesty needed when the rest of the market is suffering from a collective fever dream.
He really is. He is laser focused on the 10% that works, protecting his clients' capital, and leaving the rest of the market to their macroeconomic fantasy. But as we close out today's observation log, there is one dark lingering question that you really have to mull over on your own.
It's the elephant in the room.
Right. If Priyant's diagnosis is correct and the physics of real estate, the post-tension concrete, the basis problem, all tell us it is. If only 10% of these vacant office buildings are capable of being saved, and the whole just converted narrative is a fantasy, what exactly is the global economy going to do with the other 90%?
Yeah.
What happens to those massive, rotting, fundamentally unusable glass monoliths once the lenders finally stop playing, extend and pretend, wake up, and realize the magic beans aren't real? Take that thought with you. We'll see you next time at the desk.